This is the MS Fitness Challenge Podcast, your source for the best, most inspiring, and up-to-date information concerning all things related to MS Fitness and health. This is Stephen Gloss, your host and MS Warrior trainer and fitness advocate. The MS Fitness Challenge provides guidance and support to people with MS and fitness professionals worldwide in an effort to educate and train them in the benefits of exercise, nutrition, and mindset. Together, we can win the battle against multiple sclerosis. This is episode number 5. Today's special guest is a former member of the U.S. Women's National Cycling Team. She won a national championship, set a national record, and earned both silver and bronze medals at the national level, and won a silver medal at the world championship level. She's also a speaker, trainer, consultant, and program manager with a focus on expertise in performance management, wellness, leadership, and communication. Her incredible accolades are just the tip of the iceberg. A multiple sclerosis diagnosis would change her life forever. Today, we'll get the chance to learn how she learned to thrive with MS. The MS Fitness Challenge Podcast would like to introduce Maureen Manley to the show. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's very, very exciting. So to say that you have accomplished a lot in your life would be an understatement. Where did your drive to be a competitor, where did that originate from?
You know, I think it originated from growing up with four brothers. It was a survival instinct. You know, and actually, I've always been curious about what I could achieve. I always loved a challenge, whether it was to get up, climb up a tree, or race my bicycle to my best friend's house and better my time. It was just an innate thing that I just wanted to better myself and was, again, radically curious about what I was capable of doing.
Well, I'm sure you started to learn a lot about yourself when you got on a bicycle. So when did you start getting involved with cycling? Was it something you had taken up maybe at an early age or to come on later on?
You know, it was an early age. Ever since I was little, I loved rolling around. You know, my brothers would joke about how I loved to, you know, the little walkers when I was a baby. I used to zoom around the house. I love speed and I love movement. And, you know, when I was a child, in grade school, I loved to ride and race my bicycle around. And I didn't see any of this sort of thing on TV. I didn't have a mentor. I didn't have anything that inspired me to do it. I just loved to do it. And it wasn't until I was in college that I discovered that I could race my bike. And as soon as I made that discovery, it was truly off to the races.
That's really cool. So how did you then go from being maybe a novice, a beginner, to a world-class athlete with even Olympic potential? How did you make that transition?
You know, I made the transition because I had a huge base of endurance. I've been an athlete all my life. I love cycling. I would ride my bike and run distance, do a lot of distance stuff. And I was doing triathlons. And in college, I was competing in soccer, and I was also teaching aerobics and also running a lot. So when I discovered that female bike racing was a thing, in 1984, I watched Connie Carpenter win the gold medal in the LA Olympic Games. And I watched her do this on TV, and I said, that's what I want to do. I want to be the best female cyclist in the world.
Wow.
So I had been an athlete all my life and a high-end athlete. So when I began to start training for bike racing, I had quite a base to build from. But the thing is there was a fierce determination to achieve what I wanted for myself. And a lot of focus and action went into that.
So when did you start to realize that you maybe had a chance at actually putting this dream to fruition and actually realizing your potential? Was it during your training, or was there a mentor that you had that really pushed you to that edge?
Well, when I was in college, I started racing with, well, I started training with the men's cycling team because I knew what I wanted. Then I just found things that would help me, people that could help me get there. And at the time, it was men that could really push me at a high level. And so when I was going to school at Chico State in Northern California, it was very synchronistic that the U.S. cycling team was training in that area. And so I would go to races in the early season, and I was beating some of the women on the U.S. cycling team. And the U.S. women's cycling coach at the time said, come here, little girl. I want to. So it really was, it was a fast course to being at the national team level.
That's incredible. Well, if you're comfortable with it, can you take us through your MS experience then? And how did that impact you as an athlete and your Olympic ambitions?
Yeah. You know, after graduating college, I had earned a spot on the U.S. cycling team and was truly living my dreams. And in 1989 and 1990, I had competed at the world championship level. And the world championships are every year that the Olympics aren't. And everything was going really good. In 1991, I won a gold, silver, and a bronze medal at the national championships alone. And I was really pointing my ship to the world championships to be the, to be world champion. And also the next year would be the Olympics. And either both the world championships and the Olympics, if you win, you're the best list in the world.
Right.
Things are going really well for me until I started to feel something really strange. And I thought it was a slump because it's all I had to go off of. I wasn't quite, after the national championships, when I was preparing for the world championships, I wasn't feeling quite right. And my vision was being funky. It was blurring when I really pushed myself hard. So I figured it was a poorly timed slump, and that when I got back to the States, because I was in Europe, I would, you know, go see an eye doctor. Maybe I needed glasses or something. So when I was racing, I didn't perform at the level that I would have liked to at the World Championships. And then at the Tour de France, the women's team went and raced in the women's Tour de France. My vision blurred so severely, I lost my sight completely. Wow. And crashed in the race. So it was then that I knew something was very wrong. And I was diagnosed with MS, and I was still determined to keep racing if I could. And that maybe, you know, this was just a something that would go away because they didn't know. This was 28 years ago.
Right.
So there wasn't the information that we know about MS now. And it was a very, very frightening diagnosis because they knew less. But I was, of course, optimistic and hoping that it would just go away. And even at 92, I still kept trying to race. And I was very clear with myself and my coaches and my teammates that if the MS wasn't abating, I would, you know, I wouldn't attempt to do this. And it wasn't. MS wasn't getting any better. It was actually getting worse.
Wow.
So it was quite the blow, as you can imagine, that so much time and energy and passion went into this pursuit that it was gone, and it felt like it was gone in a heartbeat. And it took a lot to wrap my head around dealing with that loss of being an athlete at that level.
Yeah. What was going through your mind when you realized that your Olympic hopes and dreams maybe were no longer attainable? How did you get past that initial shock and that hopelessness?
You know, in the way that I, you know, I had to figure it out myself, and I now teach this stuff because so often we just want to get over it. And the important thing to know is we need to get through it.
Yeah.
So it is a process. It is a process. And the way I did it was I allowed myself to be sad. And for a while I was trying to fix it because that's what I know how to do. And when I realized I couldn't fix it, that this was indeed going to be a reality, I allowed myself to be sad about it and then move through that part of it and then come to realize that cycling and being a world-class athlete and an aspiring Olympian and all that kind of stuff, it was something I did. It's not who I am.
Wow.
And that the loss of something I did and I loved was just that. It's not the loss of me. I'm still here. And I was still there then. And I could more easily move into. Easily, I don't know. I could then move into, because it wasn't an easy transition to accepting what this was, to accepting MS and to accepting myself with MS. And I think that's a big distinction for people to understand. You know, I believe acceptance is a very, very powerful thing. And we also have to understand, and some people say in their own mind, the way they have it set up, which is fine, that I don't want to accept it. But it's important that we accept ourselves.
Right.
And so I accept myself, and myself happens to have MS. And so I had to look at, I didn't have to look at any of this stuff. Let me just use the language correctly. I chose to look at the things that I loved about cycling, and that was pushing myself at deeper levels, achieving great things, the camaraderie, and pushing and the self-expression. So I had to ask myself, how else can I have these things?
Yeah.
Because those are truly my psyche or my soul's expression. And that those are still here. MS can't touch those unless I let them. Right? So that I had control over. And that helped me to transition into what would come next for me, or the life I now would choose to rebuild for myself.
That's amazing. So how long did it take before you had the courage or even the strength to get back on a bike again? And what did that moment feel like? And what did that mean to you?
You know, it was 12 years.
Wow.
It was 12 years. And it was 12 years until I could get back riding with groups and riding at a high level. And the level just kept getting higher. And so there wasn't really one moment. There were choices along the way. And the choices came from early on acceptance of the condition in myself and my choice to do everything I could do with what it is I had to work with. And so getting back on the bike came from the small victories of even when I couldn't walk well, because the first couple of years I had MS, it was very aggressive. And I made the choice to do what I could do with what it is I had to work with and keep doing that. And in time, my ability to do more grew. So it wasn't like a light switch kind of thing that happened. It was all of a sudden, not lights, then I say all of a sudden. It was, you know, walking from one bench to another bench, 25 yards, doing laps in around where I live, doing short walks, and then finally getting back on a stationary bike. And then I would get back on a mountain bike and ride by myself because it had wider tires and I felt more stable on it.
Right.
And then as time went on and I was pursuing, I was feeling better and doing better. And I went to graduate school and I was pursuing my life and my new dreams I had set out for myself. And I decided I found that I was capable of doing a sprint triathlon. And when I started training harder than I had been training for that, I realized I was really doing well on the cycling portion. And I was very stable and I could see really well because my vision would always blur a bit when I exercised hard. And it was then that I realized, wow, I can do this on a competitive level. Or it's not like I can do this on a competitive level. Question I had, could I do this on a competitive level? The sprint triathlon was something I was participating in, and it was a huge step for me to do that. And in doing that, I discovered that I was stronger. Whether or not I could compete, I would have to find out for myself. And I made the choice to do what I could do. And it was 2003, 12 years into my diagnosis, and now 17 years ago, that I got back into a higher end cycling competition stuff. And it was surreal, you know, it was thrilling. And lining up at the start line to a race, I would always pinch myself because I never dreamed I'd be back doing anything like this. And I was back not as the person I was before MS. I was back as Maureen in acceptance, doing the best she can with what it is she has to work with, self.
Wow.
And And, you know, it was exhilaratingly surreal.
That's incredible.
Now, 17 years that I've been playing around at this level. So now it's common. It feels normal to me, but normal isn't what I had 28 years ago. What's normal is being a person with MS, adapting and adjusting it the way that I need to in order to do what I do on a bike.
Yeah. So it sounds like interwoven within the fabric and the seams of your story is a big message of endurance, patience, and self-acceptance. Would you sort of agree with that?
Yes, I would absolutely agree with that.
So how do you manage your MS and your symptoms today, and how does it impact the way that you train and exercise?
The way I manage the MS today is, I think it's important to know, for me anyways, and I would encourage others to think about this statement, that I listen, I don't dominate.
That's great.
And I want to make that very clear, because I think so often we think, I have to control my MS and then I can do this.
Guilty.
If it's controlled, then I could. And I was guilty of that too. And dominating for me did not work. And the reason I've been able to do this as long as I have is not because I have all the answers, but it's a dance. It's really a process. And so if I listen first and am willing to hear what my body is saying, because that can be scary sometimes. And I think that's why some people don't want to listen, or sometimes that's why I don't want to listen sometimes. I'll get the messages of what it needs. And sometimes I have to keep listening, and there absolutely is trial and error. So in a nutshell, I would say there's exercise, nutrition, certainly mindset and all that means. And I do take a disease modifying drug, but I say that in that order, because so often people think that they need the disease modifying drug in order to, then what's the best thing? And it's just one of the things that I use to work with my health.
Right.
And you know, when I'm feeling funky, I don't reflect on, oh my God, I need a new drug. This drug's not working. You know, I think, what's my diet been like? What's my sleep been like? What's my exercise been like? And what's my stress level been like? And so, and then, you know, reflect on those things and look and see where I can fine tune. And so that's what I've been doing for the last 28 years. And I did it. I do it a whole lot better now than I did when, you know, early on in my diagnosis, because it's something that I've learned to hone over time. And it does take practice, because I get it. And I still find myself, I do want the quick fix. We all want the quick fix.
Right. And I mean, I come from a military background, and I was only diagnosed a year and a half ago. And these are still lessons that I'm still trying to figure out and learn, because I've grown up with that military, that discipline, that mindset where I just have to overcome, conquer, and just find victory regardless of the circumstances that I'm in. And that's not my reality anymore. And that's hard to come to grips with.
It's hard to come to grips with. I get it. And I think you are so amazing, Stephen, because it is a challenge. It is a challenge, because sometimes we look at these people that we think are doing so good and we feel like they dominated it. They fixed it.
Right.
And I don't know that that's the case. I mean, some people, maybe they did. But if you really listen to them and how it is they do what they do, it's more of a process. And, you know, it's interesting for me when people say, what did you do? Like, what I do every day. I'm constantly living it. I didn't do something 10 years ago, 20 years ago that allowed me to be who I am today. It's stuff that I do constantly, and it's not as much. I mean, it's always work, but it becomes easier because it just becomes who you are and how you are. It's just catching yourself when you find yourself feeling, or when I find myself feeling like I have to control this. nah, I'm just going to keep doing what I want to do. It's we're going to be around for a longer time doing what we want to do when I listen, certainly, that when it pushes, I pull. You know, I don't push back at it because I've done this where two strong forces come at it. It's not pretty.
Oh, man.
I'm continually fine-honing, adjusting, and learning. And, yeah, and I get that you understand because, you know, once upon a time, it really worked for us to do that. We still have that personality that we can pull from to do that at times. But it's more of an integration than a – I don't do it that way anymore. I do it this way. It's both.
Right.
But just having the distinction, or I'm going to really push right here, and over here I need to listen a little bit more. It's just it's circumstances. You know, how are you going to meet the circumstances? And what I would say, the moments that we're faced with.
Yeah, I think the key word that you've brought up several times is listening. And I need to take more time to reflect on my own intercommunication skills with myself. And that's something I haven't really taken time to reflect on lately. So I really appreciate those insights.
Sure.
So why would you encourage other people with MS to pursue fitness in their everyday lives? And how has that made fitness specifically, how has that made a difference for you in your MS journey?
Well, you know, in the courses I teach an empowered living course with MS. And we talk about exercise a lot and among some other things as well. And I'm telling you this because how I position this with people living with MS is there's no doubt science has proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that exercise is very, very, very good for people living with MS. I mean, for everybody, but also for people living with MS and here's why, and here's lots of data to show you why. The thing is, when we go to our doctors, they're not exercise physiologists and they're not getting pharmaceutical reps coming in there and telling them how helpful exercise is for MS.
Right.
Right. It's not what the messaging isn't that in the, you have MS. What people are hearing is here's the greatest drug. They're not hearing about what they can do for themselves enough.
Right.
And so that I wanted to preface that because it's really important that people understand why they're not hearing about it as much. And if a pill, this is really important, if a pill could do for you what exercise does, we'd all be taking it and somebody would be making a lot of money.
Absolutely.
And so that's really important for people to understand. It's not like the research isn't out there and the lives that have proven this to be so aren't out there talking about it. So would I encourage it? Yes, absolutely. Exclamation point. And it's one thing that I would say, you know, as a life coach, I don't tell people what to do. I let them come up with the answers. Of course, the point of it is to have people see for themselves what they want for themselves. The one thing I do say that's a non-negotiable is exercise. It's really that important. It's kind of a move it or lose it thing. And it's really important to keep our bodies strong and healthy. And I'm extra passionate about it because, one, I love exercise. I've studied it and I'm an exercise scientist, former world-class athlete. And I live it. I live the experience of how much it's helped me in my life and really transformed my life. I wouldn't have the life and the lifestyle that I have today without being, I would say, in this fit body. And there isn't a neurologist that I've worked with over the last 28 years that haven't looked at my MRI and my spinal cord, my brain, my spinal cord, that would say I have a mild case of MS and are baffled by how it is that I do what I do.
It's incredible.
They do say, you know, this exercise stuff, keep it up. They get it. They get it. And I think sometimes what happens is people say, they look at me or they read a story of, about me in the paper or something like that, and they go, well, I'm not like her. Well, no, you're not. Nobody else is, because one of me, that's the thing. But don't lose. I'm doing my best to get the message out there that how important exercise, nutrition, mindset is, in addition to the other things that we do for ourselves with MS. And so it's really vital. And to answer your question is I wouldn't be where I am today. Probably I wouldn't be who I am today without this being a part of my life, because, you know, it's not who I am doesn't come from because I exercise. The who I am is a passion for doing what it takes and also continuing to do what I love. And that's exercise.
Yeah, I think a big struggle that I have with exercise is I absolutely love it and I feed off of it. But the more I exercise and the more I push my body, the more I'm reminded of how bad my MS is. And it's it's hard for me, being that competitor and having that dominating spirit, for me to slow down, to listen, like you've been mentioning, right, and to stay within that zone that I need to, that's safe for me. And there's been several occasions where I've pushed myself too far and it always comes back to bite me.
Right. Right. Yeah. And you get to decide for yourself, is it worth it?
Right.
Because I think so much of it is, you know, what I say is not giving up, but changing up. And that's what's going to help you stay in the game. And it's coming back. I mean, I would never have the amount of compassion and self-acceptance that I have for myself without going through this.
Wow.
Because that's what I bump up against, that, you know, the frustration and even the sadness sometimes can come in because I so want to be able to do fill in the blank. And I've been amazed myself at what I've been able to accomplish. I mean, I've done some bike rides and races that I'm like, I can't believe I just, you know, and then other times I'm training and go, and either I'm not able to do it or I get too wiped out because of it. And that's where self-compassion and acceptance and this listening and reflection, but never getting caught up in that this is who I am and I have to do this in order to, you know, be okay with myself.
Right.
Because that's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, certainly. When did you decide that you wanted to start speaking and telling your story to the world? Was it your main goal what is your main goal when you step in front of an audience?
Well, I knew that I wanted to speak when I went to graduate school, when I started really feeling so much better with myself, my life, my physicality was so much better. I wanted to go to graduate school and really flesh out the science and, you know, get the credibility, learn more, but also have the credibility to be out in the world teaching really this holistic self-empowering approach to creating health and wellness. And while I was in graduate school, I've been a consultant in building wellness clinics at hospitals and wellness programs for other organizations and stuff like that, which has been a blessing and something I certainly sought out to do. And while I was in graduate school, I really realized I had a message and a teaching that was very uncommon, especially at the time.
Right.
I was seeing the issues that weren't being addressed in medicine, and I felt like I had some answers and some solutions to how to better it. And that's where I really felt a call to get out there as a speaker and use the platform of my history and my life, you know, being a more able body than I once was, as a platform to be able to reach people with. And the message and the passion is that we people and organizations too are more capable of achieving what we want for ourselves than we may think. And with this holistic self-empowering approach to the creation of health and wellness or creation of whatever you want, it's not having a broader view of how to achieve this is really important.
That's incredible. So, like I said, when you get up there at that podium and you start your speech or in any setting, what is the main takeaway that you want your audience to walk away with?
Well, the main takeaway is, and I'll tell you what people say to me, and that I feel like I've met it, is that they can achieve more things than they thought they were capable of.
That's awesome.
With a different approach than they once thought they had, a broader approach that they once thought they have. And often people will come up to me and of course they say, thank you. And they'll say, I never thought about it that way. And that tells me, and I'll ask them more questions oftentimes, but that tells me that I lit a light where there wasn't a light shining for them. And when they realize that there's more things that they can do, that hope is a verb as well as a noun. Hope can be out there in treatments and whatnot, but hope is also a verb. And the problem with, and this is the science behind it, if you feel like hope is always outside of you, you become helpless and hopeless over time. And if you don't have what's called self-efficacy, your belief in yourself to create change, there's going to be a problem. It doesn't work to keep living that way. And so when you have the understandings and the strategies in order to be a creative force in your own life, then you have the both come together, hope as a verb and a noun. They're both important, but being self-empowered and believing in yourself and knowing what to do and how to do it is really important to me. And it's been just amazing and touching to see the lives that have changed and been enhanced and seeing the trajectory from maybe not so good to really good in the 17 years plus that I've been doing this has been just amazing to me.
I think what's really amazing and just inspiring about your story in particular is that it goes beyond the realms of just people living with MS, is that the principles and the lessons that you have learned and are now applying and teaching others, it goes beyond MS. It goes to anything anybody's dealing with and within any struggle or obstacle that they face. I think that's what's so powerful about the story that you tell.
Yeah, thank you. And it's why I do speaking to corporations and about resiliency and high performance. And it comes from these lessons. And, you know, and oftentimes I used to speak at a lot of MS society luncheons and programs and stuff. And one of the things that people would often come up to me and say, besides the other things that I spoke about, is they would look at me and they'd say, your talk wasn't about MS. And I would look back at them and say, no, it wasn't.
Wow.
It wasn't about MS, because that's my message. Don't have the problem be the focus of your life. Where's the solutions? So how are we looking to the solutions? And MS is along for the ride. But if we're constantly looking at the problem, we're just going to see more of the problem.
Yeah, that's really insightful and wise advice. So right here, this might come off as a weird series of questions maybe, but their purpose is to highlight the warrior spirit that you have within you. So I've got three questions for you. Why are you thankful for MS? What good has it brought to your life? And what lessons has it taught you? We kind of covered some of these, but what are your answers to those?
So the first one was, why am I thankful for it?
Right.
Well, you know, the thing is, 28 years into this diagnosis is it's sort of sculpted me into who I am today. I don't know who I'd be without it. And because of the challenges that I've faced and taken on, I've been I've accepted the challenge, and I'm grateful for the things that I've experienced and the things that I've been able to do and the people that I've met and the lives that I've been able to touch, move, and inspire, and the changes that I've even made in medicine. I'm deeply grateful for that.
That's incredible. And that sort of ties in to the good that it's brought in your life, I'm sure.
Yeah, the good that's brought in my life is endless. Wow. When I reflect on the good that it's brought in my life, you know, here's the distinction. MS didn't bring goodness to my life. It didn't bring blessings to my life. It's MS is MS, and it's what I've done with it and the choices that I've made. And because I chose to see it as a challenge, just like cycling, and got curious about what I was be able to achieve living with it and having it, you know, creating wellness centers at hospitals for people living with MS, creating wellness programs, the courses I've taught, the classes where I've been able to reach people, and the programs I've spoken at, and all the different ways I've been able to reach people with my messaging, and also connect them to amazing organizations like and charities like the MS Fitness Challenge. That, I mean, none of that would have happened without me kind of leaning into MS and saying, okay, what can I do? Not why me, but how me.
Right. It's all about seeing the opportunity and not the restrictions.
Yeah, exactly. Seeing the opportunity and creating the opportunities for myself. And so creating them for myself, I've created them for others as well.
That's awesome. So as you well know, and I know this just because we both have MS, everyone's walk with MS is going to be different. It's such an unpredictable and high variance disease. Regardless of how MS may impact people at the individual level, what is one takeaway you believe everyone can glean when it comes to thriving with MS?
You know, when it comes to thriving with MS, it's to realize you have MS, that you are bigger than MS, that you are a physical, mental, emotional, spiritual being that has this experience in it. And that sometimes people feel like that, you know, if they're just so focused on being a physical being, it can really make them feel small.
Yeah.
And so you are big. And so from that bigness, and you are whole, you're a whole person who has MS. And from there, and moving forward and thriving with MS, is to be your own best advocate. And to look at what is it that you're wanting for your life, and continue to look at those things that you want to experience in your life, and to look at all the different ways, shapes, and forms that you can get help with achieving those. And it's not just, I'm not bashing doctors and neurologists, but so often people are only looking there for a medication. There are medications, so that's great. What can you do with your nutrition? What's known about MS and nutrition? And what's going on with your mindset? What are your beliefs about yourself with MS? And look at this, and not just, well, certainly don't sit back too much and wait for hope as a noun, something outside of yourself to come to you. Because the more you empower yourself, the better you're going to feel, and the more tools you're going to have in your toolbox, the more you're going to embody what is possible for yourself. You'll just know, like we talked about, fine tuning and knowing and listening. You will become that person by being your own best advocate and bringing and continuing to bring in information and learn, and certainly apply these information, because it's just information. It becomes embodied and becomes wisdom when you work it for yourself.
That's just incredible advice. As your final question, then, as we wrap this interview up, which has been amazing thus far, what are your goals for the future, and how do you personally define success?
Yeah, thank you. What a fun question. You know, my goals for myself is to continue to be my own best advocate, and to continue to learn. You know, I have not reached any destination that says I'm, you know, better and I'm good. I've learned everything I need to learn. I will continue to learn in order to be as healthy and happy as I possibly can be, and continue to contribute into the world with my business and my work with the MS Fitness Challenge that I'm just loving, because I've really found an organization that's like 100% lined up with the things that I teach.
It's amazing.
So, and together we can do more. Together we can do more than I can do on my own. And so I'm continued to be this curious person about how I can do more with myself and my business. And also, you know, my definition of success, you know, once upon a time, probably pre-MS, success was more of a destination or an achievement. And now success really is measured by the purpose and the meaning that I get for my life, that's derived from the people I have in my life and the love I give and receive and the joy that I have and the contributions that I can make in the world. And if I feel like these things are humming along, I'm feeling successful.
Man, you are just a dynamite, just MS champion. So inspiring, Maureen. It's been amazing having you on the show. And I hope I hope that those listening, if there's so many things to take away from this, but if anything, I hope that people have been inspired to know that they can thrive with MS, that is attainable. Because you are a living example of that. So thank you so much. With that, do you have any closing comments?
You know, I'm good. We covered so much information. Thank you. Thank you for taking this on, Stephen. You are such an amazing warrior yourself in how you're taking on this challenge, this new challenge of yours. And it's just been a joy to work with you here today, talking with you and then working with you at the MS with the MS Fitness Challenge. We together can do great things for others.
You said it perfectly. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Be sure to tune into next week's episode where I will get the honor and privilege of interviewing Shauna Ferrigno, the MS Fitness Challenge Mindset Coach. If you're in search of someone who can motivate and inspire you to become the best version of yourself, you're not going to want to miss it, promise you. Remember, new episodes of the MS Fitness Challenge podcast will be available for download every Saturday on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Simplecast. A great way you can help and support the MS Fitness Challenge is by sharing, rating, and reviewing this podcast. The more people we reach, the greater the impact we can have. As we close out, remember to check out the msfitnesschallenge.com, check out the upcoming training camp in Los Angeles, and dig into all the great resources we have for you. And be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and get plugged into the MS Fitness Challenge Gym Facebook group. The group is as active as ever and will give you the chance to get integrated to a motivated cast of dedicated MS warriors. To all those listening, to all our MS warriors, thank you. Don't give up the fight. Keep pressing, keep striving, and conquer MS.